Hey, from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
There was a pause there for a minute.
There was.
Did you forget?
I was looking at comments on our Twitter account on my phone, and I was like, oh, right, that was my cue.
Oh, are we recording now? Oh, all right.
And I'm the guy behind the controls, which is the sad thing.
Gee, you're running this machine there, fella. Come on, conductor.
We're like 30 seconds in, and this is already going disastrously off the rails.
Right off the rails, right off the rip.
But, I mean, we have to get it together, though, because we have a guest in studio
this
week.
We do have a guest. Again, hot dog.
So why don't you introduce our guest, Darren?
Well, our guest is a hilarious comedian. He performs all around town, all around the country, you'd say. And he's also an amazing actor. He's been on TBS, The Last OG. He's been on Netflix's Jessica Jones and the most recent season of Orange is the New Black. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chris Lambert.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
How are you, Chris?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain too much.
That is an impressive list of credits, my friend. I did not know that you had done half of that.
Nobody does.
We got ourselves a certified star here.
You're on Orange is the New Black. You're on Jessica Jones. Wow.
Yeah.
That is cool. Did you have like dialogue?
I did. Yeah, I had a scene in Jessica Jones. It was season 2.
Uh huh.
Not sure what episode. Maybe like 10 or 11.
I think it was like the second to last one.
Yeah, yeah.
So can we look you up on IMDb? Do you have a listing on there?
Yeah.
You got a headshot and you got the credits.
No headshot yet. I have to sign up for IMDb Pro.
Yeah.
Or something.
Oh, is that how that works?
Like, I think so. Unless somebody puts it up there, or your manager does it, or something.
Yeah, I signed up for IMDb Pro. Not to like get my own listing, but because I'd need to, like, a lot of people I wanted to contact to interview.
Sure.
And you can get their managers and their agents' information to reach out to them if you have an IMDb.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was like, oh, that's a good investment.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So,
yeah, I think I have an IMDb page like back when I used to do PA work with films and stuff, but I haven't touched it or looked at it and updated in like years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see me, find out my work and like what films I've worked on when I PA'd on a film set, you can look that up on IMDb, people.
That is interesting. I think I might have a credit from like some film I did ages ago, like at least a decade ago.
Like acting or?
Yeah, it was like basically a cameo. I did no dialogue or anything. It was like the main character was having a flashback, and I played her abusive father that she.
Oh wow!
So I went to Brooklyn. They filmed me like staring down this young actress for a few hours, and that was it, really.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you had like a thespian background.
Yeah. Well, I did a lot of community theater too. So, not to toot my own horn too much. But,
thank you.
There's always the biggest egos I've ever seen is in community theater.
100%.
Like I've worked with some people that are like pretty high up there.
Yeah.
No ego.
Yeah.
But then some of these other people, you're just like, Jesus Christ. You realize that we're in Oradell, New Jersey doing this production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Like,
exactly.
Why don't you just chill the fuck out.
Exactly.
Learn your lines, hit your marks, do what you got to do. Let's do this play.
Yeah.
So we can go eat pizza after. Just fucking, you're not going to be famous off this shit.
I could tell some community theater stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did community theater for quite a while.
Yeah.
A decade or more. And then and then I was like, okay, this is still fun, but I can see the day swiftly approaching where it's not going to be fun any longer, so I think I'm going to stop while it's still...
When I first moved here, I did a production of A Raisin in the Sun in Hackensack. I was the lead, and I played Walter Lee, and then I did a production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Who were you in Cuckoo's Nest? Were you like one of the orderlies?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that was that.
They usually have like black guys as the
and it's weird because the guy called me. He was like, boy. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Whoa.
And it was in it. And my dad saw
it.
Oh, video.
It was in the script.
It was in the script.
It wasn't going off.
I thought this was when you got the call that you were cast. And I was like, well, that is inappropriate.
Like, no. And it's one of those where like my dad saw the DVD of the play. And he was like, don't do that anymore. I was like, yeah, you're right, dad. You probably shouldn't fucking do. But like I made it a role like where I came out singing a Sam Cooke song, and then I like harassed the chief, and it was pretty. I made something out of it, you know. But I think that looking back, like maybe that was like 12 years ago, moving into a new town and still trying to like find myself, trying to figure out the lay of the land. But yeah, that was the play where so many egos, man. It was people were just like, whoa, this is not. you know.
Wow.
Yeah. This is, yeah.
This just is people weird. Like treating other actors yeah. like they're better than them.
Some people yeah. just in community theater need to take a chill pill. I mean, and yeah. I've met some wonderful, delightful people right, in community right. theater. I've met some of my best friends through community mm-hmm. theater, but you know, the people who take it too seriously, those are the ones that are.
Yeah, and it's not all bad. It's great, but I just noticed that, like, coming from like doing theater in Chicago, where it's very I guess like you're all working together, you're a team, and you're mm-hmm. there for the purpose of making this show work.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, that's like kind of the attitude there in Chicago. Right. It's like very workman-like or workwoman-like mm-hmm. or work or people.
Work person.
Work person-like.
Work transgender.
Guys, don't cancel me. Yeah. Cancel me. I'm sorry. God. Just trying to make sure I'm like, saying this right. But no, but like you're very. It's
problematic hey. Though.
Okay. yeah. And then so you just try to work together as a community. And then obviously, you know, you're going to deal with egos and with artists and stuff. But yeah. like, I was just like, whoa, this is intense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Well, with all this talk about community theater, you would think we would be talking about Waiting for Guffman, but yeah.
right,
we are not.
Right, right, right. Classic
we,
film.
We are talking about 2000's The Ladies' Man, yeah. starring Tim Meadows as his SNL character, Leon Phelps, yeah. Ladies' Man.
Yes, came out October 13th, 2000.
Yeah. And let's see, we got a little information on the budget and the...
yeah, yeah. Well, you looked at it, I'll say the movie was written by Tim Meadows and two mm-hmm. SNL writers. Dennis McNichols and Andrew Steele, directed by Reginald Hudlin, who also gave us House Party and Boomerang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also did, because I'm a comic book person, he also did a run on the Black Panther.
Oh,
before yeah. the movies.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
So, yeah, that was cool. I think that was where I was first exposed to huh. Reginald Hudlin's work.
Okay.
So.
And, I mean, recently he's also directed a few episodes of The Last OG, and he most recently directed that movie Marshall that had Chadwick Boseman in it.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, as far as SNL goes, like Chris, are you a like? What's your history like with Saturday Night Live? Are you a big fan, casual fan?
I would say I'm a big fan because I watch them all. Like oh, I watch oh, okay. them all, and even if it's not, I try to just watch them usually on Sunday, like the mm-hmm. day after, because right. if I'm coming home from a show or something, or yeah. you know, just kind of watch them in the morning.
Okay,
yeah,
so we get it. You have shows on Saturdays.
You get sometimes.
You're a successful sometimes. Comedian.
Oh, I get booked. La, la, la. All right. Wow. All right.
Ooh.
I don't do bar shows on a Wednesday.
Oh, that's not true. Oh,
totally. Well, actually, so do you remember like when you first discovered Saturday Night Live? Do you have like a favorite era, favorite cast members at
well,
all? Or?
Other than Eddie Murphy, who's, I think, in a class by himself.
Thank you. I'm an Eddie Murphy apologist. I've said it numerous times.
Apologist?
Not apologist, but like, what's the word? Like, where I just...
Booster?
Booster, yeah. Like, I just love Eddie Murphy, all his work. I think he's one of the greats.
You just kind of put, like, one of the most talented people that has ever set foot on Earth. You know what I mean? Just like, mm-hmm. but as far as him...
I mean, I that White Like Me sketch is just...
Yeah.
That's great.
My God.
I had the tape of him, the SNL, like the best of. I think I remember yeah. ordering it from Suncoast Video. I'm going to age myself.
Suncoast. Nice.
Yeah. yeah. That was...
And this was a videotape, not
this
a DVD.
This was VHS, yeah. straight right. VHS, and just like...
So it was sold out of Hollywood Video, I take it, or...
No, it was... You remember Suncoast, right?
I do.
Suncoast
yeah, yeah, yeah.
was one of those. Yeah, those
in
stores
the,
in the mall.
That,
oh, okay.
Yeah, you'd buy the yeah, videos. And,
like, yeah, like near like the Fava and stuff.
Yeah, and like Spencer okay. Gifts and all gotcha. That. Mm-hmm. I think they were affiliated with Sam Goody's too, like an
probably.
Offshoot or
yeah, probably.
The same people group owned them or whatever. Anyway, I had that video, watched it all the time. Loved him, but other than him, I would say Phil Hartman, R.I.P.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell, of course. yeah.
I'm sorry. John Trouble did just did like a. I'll see.
I did the chest bump and I did the kiss to the.
Yeah, like I'll see you at the crossroads. Yeah. I'll see you at the crossroads type yeah. of prayer.
Just one of those, like, do you think about the career? Like, I was thinking about him on the way over here. It's just like, fuck, do I want to be involved with a woman that. That's in okay. That's in the same field as I am. Like uh-huh. where wow. if that you have that like jealousy or that rift, like where yeah. if you there because there's some women in my life now that I'm hope I don't get canceled.
Oh.
There's some women in my life now. Be ready for the bell.
Yeah, you got poised.
Where like if you get something,
uh-huh.
you book a thing and then they don't like your Instagram post, but they like other things. But when they know you get something else, they're kind of like, ew.
So
it's just a weird.
Huh. Interesting.
Is this person you're involved with like a comic then?
No.
Okay.
I should say less about that. Anyway, but it's just like, okay. But it's just like, you know,
where's that? What?
Well, when you see, like, no, because Phil Hartman, his wife was, yeah, you know, like Brynn, an actor, yeah, and she was trying to do stuff, and uh-huh, it's a weird thing. You gotta, I don't know. Yeah, you're,
yeah,
married.
I am married. Yeah.
So. I had a friend who had a theory that, like, if you're a creative person, it's good if you're, like, involved with another creative person, but maybe not somebody from the exact same field,
yeah,
yeah,
as you.
I mean, some couples can make it happen. Because, like,
your wife's creative.
Yeah,
she's a great author.
She's an author. She's a writer. But mm-hmm, I do comedy, so we have our own different things. Like, she. Yeah,
so you're,
like,
not directly competitive.
Yeah, yeah. Like, her getting up on stage, she has no interest at all, like, being on a microphone or in front of people. Like,
right.
Like, she's very private.
Yeah, yeah. She's, like, you know, she's, like, she has. You know, she has Facebook and stuff, but she's barely on Facebook. She, mm-hmm, doesn't like to be out there like that. She doesn't like her information out there like that. She just likes to stay in the shadows,
yeah,
write her stuff, put it out, and then just go back. Like, mm-hmm, I'm the loudmouth here who likes to be on, you know, on front of stage and talk to people in microphones.
Right,
stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's a thing where, like, you can cheer her on and when seeing what she's in, the things that she's doing, and vice versa. And it just, right, made me think about that, because I knew I was doing your show. Mm-hmm. Sorry to, like, be a Debbie Downer, but
no, it's
just
fine.
Trying to be real. Wah, wah. Just trying to be, yeah. Sorry, but no, it made me think about that, like, how much of that, just as a fan, like, how much we were robbed of, like, a great talent like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm,
that's true.
And
that's,
he was, true, just, like, really good. Just like one of those movies, like a movie like House Guest, mm-hmm, like, as great as Sinbad was, you don't have his greatness unless he's, like, matched with Phil Hartman.
He has the,
you
know, support.
Of, right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's just, like, yeah, that's one of those movies that, even though it's not an SNL movie, but it's a cast member that's really great. And sorry to diverge. Yeah. But,
no,
yeah, okay. Phil Hartman.
No, but
have you heard this show? This show could be, like, Divergence, the podcast.
I've listened, but I just I want to make sure I'm on track. But
it could be called Tangents. This,
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah, fine.
But, yeah, I mean, that is, yeah, something I've always thought about, like, how Phil Hartman took his film career. I mean, it kind of took off, but he never had, like, a big film that really,
he never,
like,
had a breakout thing. But, yeah, I mean, he was also, and it kind of like Tim Meadows in this way, he didn't have, like, a one breakout character. He,
right,
had a few things that did well, like The Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer, The, mm-hmm, Anal Retentive of Chef.
Sinatra.
And they were never hits on the level of, like, Wayne's World or something, mm-hmm, like that. So,
right.
He's, yeah, just like a stalwart, just like one of those dudes is just like a solid actor.
They called him The Glue.
Yeah, okay.
Because that was, like, his nickname among the cast, because, like,
yeah,
whatever you gave him, he would just hit it out of the park.
Killed, right, it on The Simpsons.
Killed, yeah, it on The Simpsons.
Killed, yeah, it on News Radio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, I love that show. That show needs to be on streaming somewhere.
Yeah,
I need
to get kinda, a hold
of it. That show's kind of fallen down the memory hole unfairly.
Yeah. Mm. Like, I mean, that's a show. Like, I remember watching it when it came out, and I really liked it, but it didn't seem like anybody else was really into it like I was. Like, why is anybody else talking, yeah, about News Radio? This thing is legit.
Yeah. I've told the Dave Foley story,
yes,
here on the podcast.
Oh, he,
right,
met,
yeah,
Dave Foley in Hoboken.
I met Dave Foley.
Oh, nice.
Years ago, like maybe within a month after 9/11.
Okay.
So I ended up having, like, a real conversation with Dave Foley.
Was he cool?
He was very cool. He was very nice. Very Canadian, you know?
Okay.
He didn't assume that we knew who he was. He,
yeah,
was just like, hi, I'm Dave. And we were like, yeah,
we know who you are.
Dave Foley. But yeah, it was so Canadian that he didn't automatically assume. He wasn't.
I think he did my homie's Three Guys On podcast. Out in Virginia, I think,
oh, cool,
like years ago, like a long time ago, I believe that he was performing at the Arlington Draft House, and he did a podcast with them. I have to ask about that, but I think,
nice,
he did.
Oh,
yeah.
That's pretty, right, legit.
Well, maybe we should talk about,
yeah, let's,
the,
yeah, let's talk about
ladies,
man. Let's talk about Dave Foley.
We got the ladies, man. Yeah. Let me read the back of the DVD case that we got from our local libraries.
Mm-hmm.
We have Tim Meadows stars as his popular Saturday Night Live character Leon Phelps, a sweet-natured, inexplicably irresistible, that's tough to read, love expert who tries to solve the world's romantic problems with hilarious results. When Leon and his lovely producer, Karen Parsons, lose their radio show because of Leon's X-rated on-air comments, he figures things can't get worse. So when Leon gets a letter from a former flame promising him a lifetime of wealth and happiness, things start looking up, and he figures that the love machine is back in action. Love machine is in quotes, by the way. Now all Leon has to do is figure out which one of his sweet things wrote the letter. Of course, if there's one subject Leon knows, it's women. Or does he?
Oh.
Co-starring Billy Dee Williams, the ladies' man will satisfy all your comedy desires. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this movie had a budget of 24 mil, only made 13.
So it took did not do well.
No, I think it opened up at like number 4 in the box office.
Yeah, I read that. I read that.
But I mean, I remember watching this film for my, you know, like I said, for my college newspaper, like like the last, actually the last few films we've talked about, I watched my college newspaper, and then I remember thinking it was, I remember watching it back then. I thought it was okay. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was enjoyable enough. And I look at it now, and it's like, I mean, I don't know. There's like, we'll talk, we'll get into it. But I thought there was like kind of tonal issues with the film. Like, kinda, it's kind of all over the place.
It does. It does have some problems. I thought it was okay overall. I think I saw some ways it could have been better. Chris, what did you think?
I thought, I was trying to look at it with like my 20 years ago lenses.
Had you seen it before?
I had. Okay, yeah, I was trying to remember if I had, but it had been a while. There were certain moments that I remember. But I remember thinking it was like, all right,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like I didn't. Because I watched it yesterday, and I remember I laughed in certain moments. I thought it was, it didn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah. No.
And I think I remember you guys, listening to you guys talk about, what was the episode Natty was on?
Superstar.
That was last week's episode.
How was like the character, some characters didn't learn anything. I felt like with this one, we did. Like Leon kind of had a change towards the end. I know we'll talk about that later, but that was something that I noted when I, you know, looked at this movie. I thought it was fun. It made me remember, like, damn, Karen Parsons is fine.
Yeah, like, people forgot, like, when we talk, when usually people talk about, like, you know, hotties from the 90s or, you know, attractive women, I feel like people don't look over Karen Parsons that
now
much. Hillary
was,
Banks.
She was pretty new to me because I never really watched Fresh Prince.
Oh, okay.
Bel Air. Okay. So but I looked her up this morning and I was like, oh, she was on Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
and then she was also in one of the House Party movies. So that, I guess, is how she came to be in this movie. Oh. So I don't know if she had a big part or anything, but
I just remember, I was like, man, why isn't she Why hadn't she worked like in that during that time? Maybe she just wanted to have a family.
Yeah, I think she does like children's books now, right?
Okay.
I believe. I could be wrong. But yeah, it seems like she's kind of gotten out of the business.
Yeah, but like she was good. She was like a good like leading lady. Like, you know that he's going to eventually fall for her, realize that he should be with her.
I mean, you know that within the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. I like the narration from Billy Dee Williams and like how he comes in, like, and when Leon comes in, he's like, why are you always talking to
That was a cute come in?
Yeah.
That was like the one sort of fourth wall breaking bit they did.
Right.
Yeah. Well, no, they broke the wall again later on in the movie. A
couple times.
Oh, okay.
But we'll talk. Actually, we'll get started.
So, yeah. All right. Let's go.
The movie is set in Chicago. Leon Phelps is, he's like a radio talk show host who talks. It's kind of like Love Lines type of thing where he gives, you know, sex advice and relationship advice.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all.
He has a PhD in Tang.
In Tang. Yeah. He's not he says he's not a doctor. He's just a guy that just slept around with a lot of women. So he's like, he's also like a very stuck in the 70s, as you see. Like, he has like a huge afro, like Undercover Brother. He dresses like 70s style. He has like a lisp when he talks, like a 70s pimp type of lisp.
And I noticed his afro is bigger than it was on the show.
Yeah.
Like they gave him an afro upgrade
for
this movie.
Actually, that's something else we should talk about. Like, as far as the sketches.
Afros?
Well, we could talk about that forever. But like, as far as the SNL sketch in itself, were you guys a fan of it at all, or?
Like, yeah, I liked him.
It was all right. Like, did you think it was enough to make a movie, or
the way that they executed it? I thought that they did it in the right way. Like, I mean, maybe like you guys can speak on the tonal issues that you had when you get to it. But overall, I was like, all right. You know, it was just it was fine.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, I don't. It was very pleasant to watch it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as far as the sketch goes, I always liked it because, you know, it's a guy talking about, you know, the butt.
Yeah.
It's like kind of juvenile, sophomoric, but it's still, I found it charming enough. And I mean, the fact that it's, for most of the sketch, it's just Tim Meadows talking to the camera and he's like, and he, you know, he's talking to people.
Right, because it's a call-in show.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have many people to play off of directly.
Exactly.
I mean, he's just playing off people doing, I guess, voiceover just off stage or somewhere in the studio.
So it's just him, and like, it's just him carrying the whole thing. And for the most part, I think he does pretty well. Like, and sometimes they'd have like a celebrity in. Like, I think they had like him and Cameron Diaz when Cameron Diaz hosted.
Probably the most famous sketch he did, it had Monica Lewinsky.
Monica Lewinsky was on the
sketch. You know, probably within the first year or so after that whole scandal broke with Bill Clinton.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Well,
sketch?
Let me just give Bill Clinton a quick one of those, just to cover the bases here.
Yes, sure.
What was your question?
Were you a fan of the sketch, the ladies' man sketch?
I did like the sketch. I feel like it's weird. I was trying to look up information on the ladies' man sketches to like find out how many times they did it on the show and all that. Not a lot of information out there on the internets.
What is that about?
I don't know.
Is it because he's black?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, giving this a workout. Stop keeping the black man, in this case specifically, 10 Meadows down.
That's right. Stay woke, John.
Yeah.
It seems like he was pleasant enough because one of the things, like, I watched an interview with Tim Meadows on Seth Meyers where he was talking about the ladies' man and
how it would adapt to the Me Too era. I watched that this morning.
It didn't seem, because just thinking about him, he's not malicious.
No.
He could be inappropriate, but he's not trying to hurt anybody.
Right. He's not a predator. He's a strangely innocent kind of character.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, his pickup line is like, hey, can I buy you a fish sandwich?
I mean,
can I buy you a fish sandwich? That's just ridiculous.
He's not Pepe Le Pew.
He's just a nice guy who just really loves sex.
Yeah.
And he's not too particular about where he gets that sex.
Yeah. Right.
So,
let's dive back into the movie. So, yeah, he's a talk show radio host, and Karen Parsons plays Julie, his producer.
She's like his Robin Quivers, basically.
Yes, very much so. The Roz to his Fraser Crane,
if you will.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And he gives that sex advice, and he has a pretty big following, and the show does pretty well. But then he also got like a lot of complaints saying he's inappropriate, and he says wildly lewd things. Which
this movie also gives him an origin story where
that came out of nowhere
as a baby on the steps of the Playboy Mansion.
Yes,
and he's raised by Hugh Hefner, and he's actually credited in. It's not Hugh Hefner playing himself; it's an actor playing Hugh Hefner. But he was actually credited in the credits as Hugh Hefner. So I'm assuming they got clearances from Playboy?
I guess so. There was one line in the movie that, like, when the narrator talks about it, it like kind of struck me, where he's saying, oh, you know, this, you know, this wonderful man, he had all these beautiful things, but he didn't have, the one thing he didn't have was a son. And then I looked it up, and it's like, Hugh Hefner does have a son. Like,
he has two sons.
Yeah, there's like,
who I think are running Playboy now.
Yeah, I was like, is Hugh Hefner's kids okay with that line?
Well, I think they mean, like, he didn't have any sons yet.
All right.
Because I haven't looked up when his sons were born, but I'm assuming it was sometime in the 90s, because I think they're still fairly young.
Oh, all right.
Oh, so, okay.
So maybe. All right. So maybe that works.
But then as Leon Phelps, he grows up, he sleeps with Hugh Hefner's girlfriend, and he gets thrown out of the Playboy Mansion.
Right. So, and then he just becomes this kind of vagabond who just sleeps with tons of women, and now he has a radio show in Chicago.
That's right.
Right.
That's
so then after the show, then they go to their local bar called Lester's Lounge, and it's run by this guy named Lester, played by Billy Dee Williams.
The great Billy Dee Williams. Quite a coup.
Yeah, I know.
Movie. Billy Dee.
Apparently, in the script, I watched like some of the behind-the-scenes stuff on the DVD. They were saying in the script, he was like, Lester was described as a Billy Dee Williams type character.
And they got him.
And then they were like, well, could we actually get Billy Dee Williams? And they sent the script to him, and Billy Dee's like, I think I got this.
Yeah, and there's also some local bar flies that hang out there. There's one guy, Scrap Iron, played by John Witherspoon, and Cindy, played by...
Oh, I have her name.
Jill Talley, who now does voices for SpongeBob SquarePants.
She's actually married to Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob.
Oh, really?
And I had a feeling when I was looking at these characters that I was like, okay, these have to be... Well, I know who John Witherspoon is, of course, but I was like, this other person, she has to be like one of Tim Meadows' Second City buddies from back in the day, because she's doing such a character, and I didn't think those characters quite worked for me because they were so big and broad.
Yeah, I see what you
mean.
I
felt like they were taken away from the ladies' man somewhat.
Really? I see what you mean. They were kind of...
It bugged me a bit.
A little bit, but they weren't in it so much that it like took away. They were just a little bit. All right, so then the movie goes on. Julie and Leon are talking about their show, and then this beautiful woman comes in, and then, of course, Leon makes the moves on her and, asks her to buy her a fish sandwich.
Yep.
And then says, I'd like to take a bite out of your butt.
Sure. As you do.
As you do. And he manages to whisk this woman away and have a coitus with the lady. Meanwhile, I find that the woman's married and her husband comes home, and her husband's played by Lee Evans.
Who you probably remember from There's Something About Mary.
Yes.
Yeah. I love her, man.
Yeah. He's that guy.
Yeah. It seemed like for a while they're trying to make, because like I know he's a big star in the UK. It seemed like for a while they're trying to make.
Is he? I didn't know that.
I think in the UK it's like he's a big deal. But like,
okay.
I remember like him being in this movie and Fifth Element. And like it seemed like they were trying to make him pop in the U.S.
I didn't even know he was in Fifth Element.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
I just remember Mary. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's in the Fifth Element. He was in like Mouse Hunt with Nathan Lane. It seemed like they're trying to make him pop in the U.S. for like a little bit because he was in like all these movies in like the late 90s and 2000s.
Right, but he never quite broke through. Yeah. He doesn't have his own thing.
Exactly. All right,
he's just chasing Tim Meadows around for sleeping with his wife.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like once he comes in, he sees his, you know, he doesn't catch them in bed because like Tim Meadows is at the door. You know, buck ass nude.
But if you want to see Tim Meadows' butt with a smiley face tattooed on it, by the way, this is the movie for you.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have that urge, we are not judging.
Exactly. Yes, there's something for everybody out there.
That's right.
But yeah, so he sees that like Tim Meadows it ran out, and he has like a tattoo of a smiley face on his rear end, and he's like, no, and since then he's been like very upset by it and haunted by it.
There's actually a scene where this character Barney, he tries to commit suicide by hanging himself.
Yeah.
And he like crashes into a chair. He hits himself in the crotch of the chair.
Yeah.
And then so he takes his pants off, and then his wife walks in, and then it looks like it was autoerotic asphyxiation there's like also a porno
it's
running on
pretty
the TV.
Dark.
Yeah. Like that's another
thing. I think was a Playboy video.
I think so, yeah.
There was like actual nudity. This movie is rated R, by the way.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was surprised. I had to double check because I was like, wait, that's nudity.
Yeah, that's
You don't show those in PG-13 movies anymore.
Yeah, I guess so. Because there's not too much cursing in this movie, but it's all like a lot of sexual innuendo. I guess we earned it the R. But that's one of the things that I thought about the tone in this movie was different because like Lee Evans is a very physical comedian, like kind of like a Charlie Chaplin-esque thing. So like whenever he was on the screen, I noticed he was like kind of doing some more physical comedy, and like I don't know, it seemed like he was acting in a different movie a little bit because like we'll talk about it later, but like it seemed like the tone in the movie was off. So anyway, so Leon Phelps, he escapes and then he goes back to work the next day, and of course, his boss, Eugene Levy.
The great Eugene Levy.
Eugene Levy's in this thing.
Eugene Levs.
Yeah, the caterpillar eyebrows.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's Mr. Kent, Bucky Kent. I think he's like the station manager.
Yeah.
And he's never liked Leon, but, you know,
Can't fire him because he's too popular.
Yeah, and plus, like, the higher-ups really like him.
Yeah,
and,
the
like,
station owner.
The station owner likes him. He's like, oh, I don't know what she sees in him. Yeah. And, like, you know, Julie gives, like, a knowing smile. It's like, oh, Leon probably boned.
Yeah.
And so Bucky says, well, I got the go ahead to say, like, if he says one more inappropriate thing, I can fire him.
If I get another FCC complaint about Leon.
Yeah, because he goes the owner's head and goes to FCC.
Right.
So, of course, Leon goes into this beautiful poem that it actually sounds very sweet, but then it, of course, ends with, you know, do it in the butt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the butt is a very popular thing with him. So, of course, after he says that, he gets fired for, you know, saying doing in the butt.
Right.
So, and of course, they throw him out. And then, of course, Julie and then they go back to his, Leon gets upset and he gets drunk. And so Julie takes him back to his houseboat.
His houseboat. His personal sanctuary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
And, like, he has a waterbed in his houseboat.
Right.
Motion of the ocean.
Right.
I like
this
remote control.
Oh, yeah. He had, like, a remote control, like, shaped like a woman's body.
Yeah.
Torso with no head, no arms, no legs.
Right, right.
Sexy.
And, yeah, there are two buttons that are, like, the nipples on the woman's breasts. And, yeah.
Right, right.
Exactly. And this is when you, like, really become aware, oh, you know, there's going to be a romantic subplot with the producer because she's very bemused by this. She's putting, like, Leon is drunk because he's all distraught over them getting fired.
Right.
And she's putting away, and she's like, oh, that's so cute. And
right. Like, they make it clear that they never, like, you know.
They are just friends.
Actually, there's another flashback about how they met, which I don't know. It was weird. Like, they show, they go back to the bar, Lester's bar, or Lester's lounge, and it shows, like, you know, years ago, Julie came in wearing a wedding dress, showing that she got stood up at the altar.
Right.
And, you know, Leon proceeds to, like, kind of tell her jokes and make her laugh and kind of flirt with her, but not really. But, like,
right.
She makes he makes her laugh, and like they build a friendship.
And she's in radio, so that's how he gets the radio show in the first place.
Yes, exactly.
So,
but yeah, you can tell like there's definitely like flirtation, like they're friends. There's this will they, won't they vibe.
Sure.
About right. it. Right. And yeah. So the next day, then they go off looking for work because he got fired. Mm-hmm. And they go to another radio station, head up by Chris Kattan.
Chris Parnell.
I wrote Kattan.
You wrote Kattan.
All right, my mistake.
You stole
apologize.
Kattan on the brain from Night at the Roxbury.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on him as an SNL cast?
Chris Parnell?
Yeah. Underrated.
I
always thought Chris Parnell was fine. He never really blew me away, but he did some great things. I mean, the video he did with Andy Samberg, Lazy Sunday, that's undeniable.
Is it almost like he was on the show and he's a good cast member, but then when he gets on 30 Rock, it's just like, what the fuck?
Oh, Dr. Spichemin.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like that's when he kind of came a little more out of his shell, just being like a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, yeah.
In a good way.
He's good. I'm usually happy to see Chris Parnell pop up in things. I'm happy to see Tim Meadows pop up in things. Yeah. I think Tim Meadows was underrated.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that both of those guys were kind of victim of circumstance. Because like when Tim Meadows was on, he was just kind of getting overshadowed by Sandler and I don't know whoever else was like.
Well, also he was on like the same time Tracy Morgan was on
that too. So, yeah, he was there from like 91 to 2000.
I believe. You know, you can't have more than one black person break at the same time.
No, you can't. I mean,
there are union rules against that.
I don't see how that's possible.
I don't even see how Darren and I are on this podcast at the same time.
I actually should leave.
We had a real problem with scheduling. I'm not happy with it, but I'm just rolling with it.
Wow.
I see your true color.
Jeepers. This is awkward. But yeah, I mean, as far as Chris Parnell goes, yeah, I think when he was on, he was, again, like he was kind of getting overshadowed by, you know, Will Ferrell and, but like for the most part, I thought he was like a great character. He rarely broke. He did his work, went in.
Good, reliable. Yeah. And you need those utility players.
Yeah.
On the show.
I always love seeing him every time I see him on TV, on a show or something. The last time I saw him, he was on Grown-ish. It was really fun.
Yeah. I mean, I know he does like a ton of voiceover work now, like Archer and whatnot.
Grown-ish is like the spinoff of Black-ish.
Yeah,
right?
it's on Freeform, formerly ABC Family.
Right. Okay,
good
okay.
show actually.
Yeah, and then there's another spinoff of Grown-ish, Mix-ish, which is coming out this fall.
Yeah,
a lot of ishes.
And
Tim Meadows is on a show now where he's like playing a principal, right? It's a spinoff of the Goldbergs.
Yes,
Schooled.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I don't know the name of it.
It's like a but it's like a spinoff of the Goldbergs, where it's like it takes place in the 90s.
Okay,
but I forget what it's called.
I think it might be Schooled. One of my friends writes on that show.
Might be. Oh, really?
Let's see.
Okay. All right, but So then they go to Chris Parnell.
Schooled. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Schooled.
Yeah. It just premiered this year.
Okay.
He plays Principal Glasscott.
You got to pronounce that very.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's a joke that comes up.
It probably is.
Glasscott
with two T's.
Gotcha.
Apparently.
All right. So yeah. So then they go on a job search. They go to different radio stations. They go to. They give Chris Parnell their demo tape and they play it and it's like
it's all him advising people to do it in the butt.
Yeah, doggy style.
Yeah.
And she keeps trying to fast forward through the inappropriate parts.
Yeah.
And like every time he stops, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. So doggy style, back to doggy style. It's just constantly talking about doggy style.
Right.
And then they go to another radio station looking for a job, and this one is headed up by Mark McKinney.
Mark McKinney.
Again. This movie is like the third movie we've talked about that has both Mark McKinney in it. Third movie that's had Will Ferrell in it, and the third movie that has Tim Meadows in it.
They put their friends in. You put your friends in shit.
We see a lot of SNL alums pop up in these SNL movies.
Yeah,
this is
very much
the trend.
So.
And this is, I think, at least the third week in a row we've seen Mark McKinney.
Yeah,
in one of these movies,
he pops up. Yeah. So then you're talking to Mark McKinney about being on his radio station, and he looks over his resume. It's like, all right, according to your resume, it seems like you're interested in debit. And he's like, oh no, that's the butt. But.
And he's like, well, we have a slot we'd like you to fill in. And he's like, I'm very experienced at filling in slots.
I
filled a slot just this morning.
And he gets a job on this radio station, which is a Christian religious radio station.
Plot twist.
There you go. And of course, he interviews a nun. It's so you a nun? So how long have you been nunning it up?
Mm-hmm.
And So, like, the nun talked about, you know,
all missionary.
She has a new missionary position in Bangkok.
He starts sweating.
He starts sweating.
Yeah. Like, oh. That was a funny scene.
Yeah, it was
that.
Funny. It was probably one of the funniest scenes. Well, we can argue about that.
Because
yeah,
he's trying
there.
Hard to stay appropriate, yeah. and she just keeps giving him all these mm-hmm. straight lines, like, oh, I've assumed the missionary position for many years. I enjoy the missionary position.
Yeah.
I'm going to Bangkok to assume a missionary position.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So then he gets fired from that. So again, they're out of a job. So then the next day, then after that, he's like, oh, I'll think of something. Then he goes, has sex with another woman. And so the next
day.
As you do. That's how you think clearly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then the next day, he gets a letter from his mailman, played by Kevin McDonald.
From the Kids in the Hall.
Like, yeah, he's just in it for a bit. And he gets a letter from this woman that's just signed Sweet Thing.
Right.
And it's a woman he's had sex with in a laundromat. And he says, like, you know, I haven't forgotten about you. I still want to be with you. Like, I'm very well off. So let's meet up and, like, you know.
Let me provide for you.
Yeah, let me provide for you. Like, so he's basically now a gigolo.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, this sounds great. I'll just be with this woman and she'll provide for me and we'll just bang and that's cool.
By the way, when he shows this letter to his producer, what's her name?
Julie.
And she's reading from the letter. And there's, like, this big continuity error. I don't know if you noticed. But they have a close-up of the letter. And Julie, the letter says that they show on screen says, I've never forgotten. But Julie in her dialogue says, I still remember.
Oh.
And this was like automatically noticeable to me.
I mean,
and it's like very easily readable handwriting.
I also, just to backtrack a little bit, I like the part where he was sifting through his mail.
Yeah.
He's like, light bill. Whatever.
Yeah.
He's just like throwing shit away.
Yeah. Boat bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was cute.
I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, join the club.
Like, oh, I'll open this in 3 days. I know whatever's inside this letter I'm not going to like.
I'll wait till I get that email saying, yo, where my money at?
Yeah.
So he gets this letter saying, oh, great, I could be with this woman, but it's signed Sweet Thing, and he doesn't know who it is because he's slept with many women, and he calls all women Sweet Thing. So for part of the movie, he's just trying to find out who this woman is.
Right.
So another part of the movie,
which if you've watched the trailer, you probably know who the woman is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's kind of a given.
Oh, and I like that diner scene. That's when they're in the diner, right? And
yeah.
Where she's like, yeah, you call her Sweet Thing. And he's like, oh, yeah, this is my Sweet Thing. And he's a Sweet Thing. Can I get some more pancakes? And he just calls everybody
Sweet Thing.
And she's just like,
all right. So another part of the movie that it's where Lee Evans, Barney, he's very, you know, he can't get over the fact that his wife slept with this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just very like, it's, you know, he's just. It takes up all of his day. And
we're in the year 2000, so what do? You go on the internet.
Yes, you go on Lycos or whatever.
You search. Yes. Yes.
You go to Alta Vista.
You go to Ask Jeeves and you find out.
Yeah.
You know, you do a search for buttock with a smiley face tattoo.
Yeah.
And
you get some websites that you probably shouldn't be looking at work. And then you find this other website where it's like a group of men who have also had their lives ruined by the dude with the smiley face tattoo in his butt.
VSA, Victims of the Smiling Ass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
he looks into it. He's like, oh, what's this? So he finds his group. He goes, meets with them. And it's a group of men who have also had their, you know, girlfriends or wives, you know, banged.
Or sisters or mothers or
aunts or grandmothers.
Yeah.
You know, just banged out by Leon Phelps. What, is that not the right? Is that the right thing to say?
I don't know. That just amused me.
And, of course, the leader of the group is Will Ferrell, who plays Lance.
Right.
And he's this dude who's really, you know, upset by this. And he's like, we will have our revenge on him. We will find him.
And he is also very, very into Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yeah, a little too much.
He goes into great detail describing the Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yeah.
And how excited that gets him.
Yeah. And, of course, it's like thinly veiled way, like he's hiding his, homoeroticism. Because he loves like grappling a man and pushing him down, his oily body skin against your flesh.
Yes.
And like everybody looks at him like, what's going on? You're right.
Yes.
What's going on, buddy?
What's going on, fella?
And at the meeting, Barney has brought a pair of pants that Leon left behind when he was chasing him out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, well, that doesn't mean anything. We've all got all these discarded clothes from the guy. It doesn't mean anything. But then an inscribed cigarette lighter falls out of the pocket. And it says the ladies' man. So now they have their first clue as to who this guy really is.
Eureka.
So.
And then the musical number.
Oh, yeah. That comes up, too. Well, I think they figured out from the cigarette lighter, the ladies' man, they figured, oh, it must be the ladies' man from this this radio station.
Right.
So then they drive up to the radio station and they say, you know, today we take back our manliness. Yeah. We're manly men. And then they go off into this whole, like West Side Story dance routine, which I was like, wow, that's
talking about how they're going to get the ladies' man.
Yeah.
And it's just an out of nowhere musical number.
What'd you guys think of that?
I mean, I thought it was well done, but I don't know if it belonged in this movie, though, but I liked it.
I thought it was okay. I thought this was a place where, like, the low budget kind of hurt them. Because it has, like, just a little over a dozen guys. There are, like, 14 guys. And I think for it to really work, you needed to be more over the top with it. You needed to get, like, a few dozen guys in there and have, like, a big production number. Like, I don't know. Like, what's the movie? 500 Days of Summer. Like, you got that big production number, and that really works because it's out of nowhere, and it's like, and they had enough extras in production value to really bring it off. And here it's just like, it's like 14 guys dancing on the street.
I think that kind of made it kind of made it funny too. Like,
yeah,
it's not that many of them, but it's just like, it's a little weird, but it works.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was funny. I liked it, but I was like, I mean, I just, again, with the tone, like, I don't know, like, because, like, that's kind of, that's like this big dance number comes out of nowhere, but then there are some points in the movie where they're trying to play like very sweet and sincere, especially like with Leon and Leon and Julie. But then there are some parts where it's like, you know, Lee Evans is doing his physical thing, so I'm like, I don't know. But I did like the dance number quite a bit. But then, so it's them doing this big Broadway style dance number up to
up to the radio station.
Then of course. You know, Bucky Kent, you know, Eugene Levy says, oh, yeah, I fired him like a week ago.
Right. But they learn his name and they figure out what he looks like.
Yeah, he gives his government and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, here's this picture. Here's where he hangs out. Go get him.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and at the same time, he has like a bunch of letters for people saying that they want the ladies' man back.
Right.
But like, he's like, whatever.
So
like,
there's a fan base crying out for him. And meanwhile, we got Leon. He's trying to track down who this sweet thing is. So he's going back to all his old conquests to try and figure out who may have written this letter. He interrupts one woman in the middle of her wedding.
Oh, yeah. And then he hits on the bridesmaid once it's not her.
Yeah, which was cute. Yeah. And he like advises the groom. He's like, oh, you know, she likes this.
You know, when you smack her in the butt.
You should do that.
He talks to like Tamala Jones, I believe, at one point.
Yeah.
Actress Tamala
Jones. And there's one scene where it's...
Well, hold on. Okay. So that scene with her, so she kicks him out.
Yeah.
And then he goes to look in his black book. And then it's like in the same building.
Yeah, across the hall.
It's across the hall. That's fucking funny.
Yeah. That was cute. That was cute. I like the concept of him just...
Yeah.
He's slept with every woman in that building. That
like,
was,
hey, what the...
Yeah. and then there's... another weird kind of out of nowhere cameo.
Yeah.
One of our Twitter followers actually said like, yeah, this is a really random cameo.
And sure enough it was.
And suddenly he's just talking to Julianne Moore.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked that up and that's after she got nominated for Boogie Nights, didn't she?
I think so.
In 97, 98.
Yeah, that was sometime in the 90s.
So it was 90s. Like she didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
But she did.
Yeah, that was
so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how that came about. I wonder.
I know she was on one of the maybe when she hosted SNL. She was definitely in one of the sketches. I still remember it. And like, you know, talking about like, you know, Leon's Wang or something. But I guess she just figured, "Oh yeah, I'll just do this. It's like it's like a day."
It's pretty fun.
Yeah. And she's in a dressing room. She's in like a makeup chair and you see like costumes all around and you're like, "Oh, she's like a showgirl. She's the type of performer." And then she goes behind one of those changing screens to change. And then she comes out, and she's in full clown makeup.
Yeah, right. She's a clown.
She is a clown, like a kid's birthday party clown, a Ringling Brothers circus type clown.
Bloopy, I believe her name.
Yes. And, I mean, and she is unrecognizable in the clown white makeup.
Yeah, Army thought it was like a different person altogether. I was like, did they just put it in? I don't know.
I mean, who knows? But and she wants to have sex while she's dressed up as a clown, and this is so creepy that even Leon is a little...
Right.
Taking it back,
but yeah, he eventually does it.
Still does it
because like she like humps on her, and he, you know, she humps on him, and is like, oh, all right, let's do it, and he bangs out a clown,
bang it out,
So anyway, Where else are we up to? Oh, so another thing that happened back at Lester's Lounge.
Yeah.
Because Karen was saying, well, not Karen, Julie was saying, played by Karen Parsons.
Right.
She was saying, well, you know, if we, since we can't find a job, maybe I can talk to my ex, the guy that left me at the altar, because like he has hookups and he can hook us up.
He was like a manager at a radio station, I think she said.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and that man was played by Rocky Carroll, played Cyrus, was the guy's name.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he was on Rock, and he's done a few.
I've seen him in a lot of stuff.
Papa Mayhem.
Yeah. Yeah. Another underrated show. Rock was so dope. Oh, God,
yeah.
And, but I think he does, like, he's on, like, Criminal Minds or SVU or something like that. Mm. But, so anyway, so he she brings Cyrus to Lester's Lounge, and Lester's, you know, of course, he's very dismissive. He's, like, the jerk of the movie. Was like, right. you know, this is, like, some dive bar.
Because if it's somebody in a movie that you used to be engaged to, they have to be a horrible person. Yeah.
That's movie rules.
It's never like, oh, they're a decent person. It just didn't work out.
Like cartoonishly evil.
Yeah, you're always like, what did you ever see in this person?
Yeah. But, so anyway, so of course he dismisses them both and is like, yeah, I'm not helping you guys out. And like, you know, he insults Julie. Leon stands, you know, defends her honor. And it looks like they're about to get into a fight, but they end up having like a kind of like an eat off type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I think Cyrus says, "Yeah, no, I'm from the hood. I'm from the streets. I'll mess you up." And I think Leon says, "Well, if you're really from the streets, why don't you like, you know, eat a pig's feet or something?"
He eats pickled pig's feet, pickled eggs, and prairie oysters. It's all the bar food.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I've never even heard of prairie oysters.
Neither have I.
I've heard of prairie oysters. I meant to look up what they were, and I'll see if I can find it quickly. And
yeah.
But anyway, it like tops off, they ask him to eat grizzled lumps.
They also eat hog maw. Hog I know
balls.
Hog maw, or hog balls.
Well, they say hog balls because then at the end of the movie, you see the hog balls like he's selling.
Oh, right.
Hog balls.
Yeah. And like as they eat all this bar food, like Leon loves it because he looks like he kind of grew up on eating bar food.
Just ate anything.
But you could see like Cyrus getting sicker and sicker as he eats each. But then they go into eating something called grizzled lumps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
which we find out is human shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is excrement.
Where did he get that?
I don't know. Like they just
and it's sitting in a jar.
At
the bar, which has to be a health code violation,
that
right?
That can't
that
be safe.
That cannot be up to code.
Yeah, you know,
what kind of joint are you running there?
Yeah, and they were like, oh, I can't believe that worked. And I'm like, so you keep just a jar of human shit just for...
Just in case. Well, apparently they needed it.
So. Just in case an asshole comes.
Shits and giggles.
I found out what a prairie oyster is, by the way. It's a traditional beverage consisting of a raw egg, often yolk alone, Worcestershire sauce, I'm mispronouncing that, vinegar and or hot sauce, table salt, and ground black pepper. It's basically a hangover cure.
Oh, okay.
I'll just have a hamburger, thank you.
So,
Jesus.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
That sounds awful.
We just go to Wendy's.
Yeah, let's just go.
Yeah.
Let's go to McDonald's. Yeah. So, that sounds like, I do remember that kind of being a thing, like in bars, especially in the 70s where there'd just be gross bar food sitting in jars,
right?
Yeah. Like pickled eggs and whatnot.
But this whole scene where they make Cyrus eat all the stuff, I didn't get it. I didn't get the point of it. It had nothing to do with anything.
It's
else
just
in the
kind
movie.
Of like a gag, like a sophomore gag.
Yeah.
Where you make the guy that treated the main girl look like shit, and you know.
I just thought it was weird because it's not like he was the main antagonist of the movie. He basically comes in for this scene and that's it.
I think maybe did he get a special credit? Did Rocky Carroll get one? Was he with Julianne Moore under those special credits at
no,
the
I
end?
Think he's in maybe. A, I think he's in a regular credit.
Yeah, okay. I think he.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, so then that happened, and of course, I think it looks like Julie and Leon get a little closer and bonding over them trashing her ex. Meanwhile, the VAS crew, they go
VSA.
VSA. Oh, yeah. VSA. What did I write?
VSA.
I'm writing all the wrong things down. Jeez Louise. God. VSA.
Chris, do you want to co-host a podcast?
We can only have two black guys as we've
established. There can only be one. Highlander.
Oh, God.
And this is proof of it. I mean, Darren, come on.
I got to get it together. But yeah, so the guys, they find his houseboat, and they ended up torching the boat.
Right. It goes up really quickly because they say that place was full of pleather and cologne.
Yeah. Apparently, which, pleather is flammable.
And I like how like the continuation of the musical bit where they get there and then he's there. Like, yeah, we're gonna get whatever the song is. And
we're gonna get the ladies, man. Yeah,
I'm gonna kill that stupid bastard.
Yeah. And I did like they cut away from them, like when they were going up to the radio station. They cut away from them for a bit, and then they just cut to elevator doors opening, and they've just done their big finish.
Oh, jazz hands.
They're all doing the jazz hands.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I did like that. Yeah,
I like that stupid, awkward, weird shit sometimes.
Yeah,
yeah, no, it's great.
It was the random bits were fun. So they escape the flaming wreckage of the houseboat, but they get Leon's little black book.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their next clue in their quest.
Right.
So
exactly. Like, so Leon, of course, finds out that they burned his house down. He's very despondent. He has he has no job. He has no house. Everything he owns is up in flames.
Right.
So, of course, he gets drunk and he goes to where Julie's staying, which is her parents' house.
Right.
And he passes out on her parents', you know, front stoop, like, you know, all drunk and stuff now. But he's able to be charming enough that his parents, like, let him in and they like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is when Leon begins falling for Julie. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And I think, you know, note for the shift, you know, in that scene where he challenges Rocky Carroll's character?
Oh, I think it's Cyrus.
Cyrus, yeah. Where he challenges him and, you know, he takes up for Julie like that.
Right.
Yeah,
it's like that shift where
he's fighting for her honor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So then Julie and Leon have a heart-to-heart in her, you know, her childhood bedroom where she's staying because she's looking for work. And, like, they kind of have, like, a very sweet moment. And, like, they, you know, one thing leads to another. And they end up kissing. And, like, they're, like, kind of like, oh, there's sparks here. And, of course, while they're kissing, like, Leon realizes who Sweet Thing is. Because
he sees a sticker on the window for DeLune Security. And then he realizes that the logo on that sticker is the same logo that was on the letter he received from Sweet Thing.
Right.
So he realizes that Sweet Thing is actually Honey DeLune.
Yes. Exactly.
So he then goes off to his old flame, Honey DeLune, who is played by Tiffany Thiessen.
Yes. Yep.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Ooh, she is.
By the way, this movie features Tiffany Amber Thiessen in all her scenes. She is wearing lingerie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's either in lingerie or in a hot tub.
And that was almost 20 years ago, and she kind of looks better now.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, like, back to 90s hotties, like, you know, Kelly Kapowski was everybody's just like, my God. But, like, she
and, yeah.
Because this
was the point when I gave this movie 5 stars. I was like, I love this movie. Well, I forgive everything it has done up until this point.
All the awards.
More,
it gets all the awards.
More Tiffany Amber Thiessen in lingerie.
Listeners, I'm not going to be am I problematic if I refer your listeners who like women to, if you just Google Tiffany Thiessen, Me in My Place?
What is that?
I'm Googling that right now.
Is this NSFW?
I wouldn't use it at work.
Oh,
but if you, like, what are you? You like look it up on your phone.
Yeah, look it up on your phone at lunch, guys. Don't type in your work. Don't use your work email for this.
No. Do it at work. Do it at work, and then call your boss over to show them.
Call the HR person. They'd get a kick out of it too. Yeah.
I'm so excited. I can barely type right now.
I'm really. So let's see. I don't even. What's going on here?
And my place. Well. Oh. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh.
We're all glancing at the photos. Are these recent photos?
It might be like within the last 3 to 5 years, I want to say.
And I'm assuming Me in My Place is like some sort of Architectural Digest website where she is showing her furnishings.
Yeah, there's like a ton. It's like it was like a Tumblr page where like maybe 5 or 6 years ago where you have like actresses and women that would pose like for, you know, in their homes and like nice, like, you know, they're very like sensually and.
Yeah, she's. I mean, this is very nice. It's not like explicit. Yeah, she's in like just t-shirts and like a button-down shirt.
It's very tasteful.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, didn't Topanga do that too?
I believe she might have.
Oh,
Danielle Fishel.
Okay, well, I am going to have to close this window now.
Guys,
so
podcast is we're ending it right now.
But I would just say because she
like that movie was almost 20 years ago, yeah. and this is recent. This is the last 5 to 6, and she looks great.
Yep.
She's swoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So
to summarize, Tiffany Thiessen is quite attractive.
Yeah. Hacha. So Leon realizes it's her. He's like, oh, I'm rich. Fine. And mm-hmm. of course, while in celebrating that he found like a sugar mama to be with,
right.
we see that Julie looks very hurt because he's like, she actually let her guard down and mm-hmm. try to get close to him, and she ended up falling for him. But now he's just going to go to some woman that's going to, and she's like, you know, she caught feelings.
Sure.
And now she's like,
oh. Yes, yes.
And now she's
as you do.
As you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now she's let down. And of course, they show that, you know, Honey DeLune is actually married to Will Ferrell's character.
What? Plot twist.
Right, plot mm-hmm. twist.
Oh my God. I did not see that coming. I exactly. totally saw that coming, you guys.
Because, like, as she hangs up, you know, Will Ferrell comes out in a Greco-Roman garb. It's like, were you talking to somebody?
Yeah, like, he's in his, like, wrestling. What do you call
singlet?
That?
Singlet?
Yeah, a singlet. Yeah. yeah.
And, like, okay. and then he ends up wrestling some dude, Brian. And a little, this is for the New York comedian fans out there. That guy, Brian,
uh-huh.
Comedian Aaron Berg, who's a.
Really?
Yeah, New York New York. I looked it up. It was him.
Holy All shit. Right.
Yeah. He's done some acting here and there. Okay. So if you're, you know, if you're on the East Coast and you know the New York comedy scene, you know Aaron Berg.
I worked with him at the Borgata not
there
too long
go.
Ago.
There you go.
All right. Look at that.
That must have been a really young Aaron Berg.
He looked super young. He had like hair and everything. He was pretty young. So, all right. So then after that, Leon decides, oh, I got to go get some, fresh fly threads. That's what I was trying to say. And he goes, there's this scene where he gets dressed in this, this store that sells just 70s clothes.
Right.
And, his man Aloysius, who runs the place, you know, played by Reginald Hudlin, the director.
Mm-hmm. A little directorial cameo there.
Exactly. And he has like this kind of, you know, montage scene of him just trying on outfits and
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And it's like, oh, I mean, it's weird. So he picks up an outfit and he goes to the bar. And he's like, oh, yeah, you like my new suit? It's custom made, $100.
Yeah.
And it's just him.
Because he's classy.
Yeah. And so it's just him talking and bragging about how he found his sugar mama and, like, he's good to go. And, you know, of course, Julie overhears this and she's upset. She punches him in the face and she just ends up drinking and stuff. And, you know, it doesn't really.
Because she's got it bad for Leon now.
Yeah.
And Leon is still oblivious.
Like the Usher song.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you got it bad? Oh, yeah. So Leon goes to Honey's place, and you know, of course, she immediately wants the sex, and but
as course, you do,
as you mm-hmm. do, as you do, Leon comes with plastic flowers and a box of Mexican wine.
Yeah,
as you do.
Yeah,
and
they're plastic, but they smell real.
They smell real. And of course, you know, she goes to town, but he finds out he can't do it. He can't please her because he realizes, oh wait, I see Julie in my mind.
Well, no, he physically he can.
Physically
he has no problems with his wang.
The wang works.
But he has an attack of conscience.
Yeah. And so he realizes he actually loves Julie, so he doesn't do it. And of course, I think and that's when the guys from, you know, Victim to the Smiling Ass come to his to the house.
And Will Ferrell is in the wrestling singlet.
I think he's just dressed normal.
Oh yeah, he changes into it.
Yeah,
and starts oiling up.
Yeah, because like they go to his house to plan the next move, trying to find the ladies' man, and they go in, and of course they find him. They find Leon butt naked with Honey DeLune and
right,
and of course they
Tiffany
like,
Amber Thiessen and Tiffany lingerie once again
in lingerie.
I just want to keep making this point.
Oh boy, that I was not ready.
She is quite attractive, you guys.
That sexy lingerie.
Oh. So, of course, the guys get upset, and, of course, Will Ferrell's character challenges him to a Greco-Roman wrestling, to fight for her honor.
So, if you've ever wanted to see an oiled-up Will Ferrell in wrestling gear, this, again, is the movie for you. This has something for everyone.
Yeah.
It has Tim Meadows' butt, it has Tiffany Amber Thiessen in lingerie, and it has an oiled-up Will Ferrell. Yeah. What more do you need, people?
That's it. Ladies.
What more do you need?
Yeah. So, like, they all go out to Will Ferrell's front lawn. Of course, you know, Will Ferrell's all oiled up. Tim Meadows, Leon Phelps, some oil. He's like, nah, I'm good. Nah, I'm good. That's cool.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody's like, you should really take the oil. It hurts when you don't have the oil. It's like, nah, I'm cool.
Yeah.
And of course, Wilfred Lance has this big speech like, oh, this is a new day. This is, we take back our manliness. Like, you're going down, Leon Phelps. And of course, he attacks him. And of course, Leon Phelps immediately just knees him in the balls. Yeah. and punches him in the face.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's not wrestling. What are you doing? Ow. And, yeah. Leon just fights dirty, and he just said, all right, so I'm just going to go. I'm just going to walk away from all this.
And he gives a speech to make Will Ferrell realize that he is actually gay.
Yeah, very much so. Well, he there's this big speech where he says, like, oh, you're all upset with me because I have sex with your wife. But then, you know, what did you take care of your wives?
Not providing?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What if you provided for them, you know, just pointing the finger. Like, if you provided for them, I wouldn't have... you know, bang them.
Right.
Which I guess in a weird way is true, but...
Yeah. And amazingly, this turns all the guys around.
Yeah.
After that, everybody's like, they're... I wouldn't say they're cool with him sleeping with all their women, but they at least don't mind as much.
He Jedi mind tricked them.
Yeah,
he,
it's very cuckoldy.
Yeah.
In a way, yeah. It's like...
Yeah. Cuckoldy.
It's cuckoldian, I guess you could say. But of course, Barney's still upset. It's like, no, we said we're going to capture this guy and cut his balls off. And he pulls out a gun, and he's, you know... swings the gun around, says, let's cut his balls off, and...
Oh, and yeah, and they're carrying around, like, a pair of bolt cutters for a lot of this movie, because they want to cut his balls off.
Yeah.
Kind of forgotten that, mercifully.
Me too. But, yeah, oof, that was rough.
And even some of the other VSA members are, like, weirded out. They're like, whoa, we want to get this guy. We don't want to cut his balls off.
But of course, like I said, like, you know, Leon talks to them, and they all are kind of cool with him at the end. And like, I guess you're right. Maybe the problem was me. Maybe I need to be more attentive to my ladies.
And he also makes a big speech about how much he loves Julie, how he's made this realization.
Right. And at that point, that's where Julie and everybody from Lester's Bars goes to the house, too. Because before this, the guys from the VSA were looking for Leon at, you know, his haunt, the bar.
The bar.
And then, like, Lester.
Billy Dee Williams. Billy Dee, he realizes that.
Yeah, he realizes that, this guy was the same guy that's married to Honey.
Leon's in a lot of trouble. We got to go help him out.
Right.
Because, like, Lance gave him his business card. So that's that's how they have the address.
Right.
So then they all go to the bar.
See, it all checks out. It all ties together.
Yeah.
This is like a Swiss watch of screenwriting right here.
All the logistics work out. So then they go, and of course, Leon professes his love for Julie. And she hears it, and he's like, oh, I love you too. Mm-hmm. And they fall in love.
Yeah,
and everything works out. All the guys just kind of go walk away and go to the attend to
them. And we have an epilogue that's like a year later. Leon's married to Julie. They have a little baby.
Yeah, which I thought was weird. It kind of goes against like the ladies. I guess not. I guess maybe ladies.
No. He's settled down. He's settled down. He's gotten all that out of his system because he found the one true.
Oh yeah,
it's one true love, man.
Yeah, one true love. Yeah,
and he gets his job back at the radio station.
And they go
somehow.
National.
Yeah, and they go naturally. It becomes like a big hit.
Yeah, no, I think they went to a new station. I don't think he was at... Were they at the old station or was
it
that
seemed
a new
like
station?
It was the old one. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure.
I don't think I'm going to go back and check. I was thinking it was a new station, but...
But he's got a job. That's important.
The show is national now, so it's very successful,
he's
and it's
working.
A happy ending.
Yeah,
and
now he's a spokesperson for Hogballs, as you...
Yes.
We mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
you know, that...
Yeah,
you, they you need
a supermarket display with Leon, like, giving a thumbs up.
They good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's it. Everything works out. And that's the ladies, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that was a little bit of harsh.
That's too harsh.
That is harsh. The audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 42%, though. So
even that's a little harsh. It was.
I thought it was. This movie was perfectly fine. There were some bits I liked more in concept than in execution.
Mm.
I feel like the romance between Leon and Julie could have been like more developed.
I don't know. I mean, for a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I fucked with it. I liked it. I liked their chemistry together. I mean, me being a fan of Karen Parsons, you kind of would want to see her do a little bit more. But within the world of that film, she is the girl, and he's the one that's really got to make that change, and you kind of see that happening. So I was fine with that relationship.
Yeah. See, now maybe it didn't work for me because I didn't know her from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, so I'm coming to... her more or less cold. Mm. So she was new to me, and I felt like her character was kind of underdeveloped. We didn't find out a whole lot about, like, you know, we see her childhood home, but we don't really discover anything about her character. And
I mean, well, they do the background thing where like she got left at the altar. That's a little bit.
Yeah. I just wish we knew like a little more about her personality, about her traits, and you know why she and Leon are such a good couple. I felt like we were just supposed to assume that and not.
I think, well, I mean, you could always go with more development, but I mean, for what they gave us, it worked for me. It was just like, that, I mean, it's almost like a trope, like the guy that's like, I'm this type of guy, and I'm blah, blah, blah.
And she's like the girl next door.
Yeah.
I just looked at the time. This is 84 minutes.
Yeah, pretty short movie.
Pretty short. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's good to keep the comedy short, but... Right.
I know what you mean, though. I understand.
Yeah, and I also felt like Leon's arc could have been like a little stronger. I wanted to see him come to more of a realization and maybe sacrifice something more. To
kind of have him be in the shit a little more? Like, really, really, instead of just being drunk?
I mean, I felt like he didn't make quite enough of a change. You know, like, he was like... He was more saying... Like, oh, I love Julie and you should listen to your ladies and stuff. But I didn't feel like we ever saw him sacrifice something for her.
I could agree with that.
You know?
Yeah, I can see.
I think that might have been good. I think that might have been a little stronger.
Yeah, I can see what you mean by that. He went through the change, but he didn't really.
He lost his boathouse.
That's something. That got sacrificed. There you go.
But that wasn't through his actions.
No. It was through indirectly. His actions. He's fucking all these women.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But it was very indirect.
I know what you mean, though. Like, you kind of want to see him being a little bit more at rock bottom to a certain degree.
Yeah. Like, I don't need the houseboat. I don't need my black book. All I need. Yeah. Like maybe if he burned his black book as, like, a gesture of, like, I don't need this. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Or, like, maybe have that more realization that, like, oh, I've just been having sex with all these women, but it hadn't been fulfilling me, like,
or
being with this
I didn't
person
know
does.
That I was hurting all these people.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Like,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we talked for about 3 minutes how hot Tiffany Thiessen is.
Yeah, we did.
And he's with her.
Yeah.
And he's like, this isn't right.
I mean,
he's with Kelly Kapowski, and he's like,
I mean, that's
the dream.
I'm in love with the dream.
That's the apex.
I'm in love with another 90s sitcom actor.
Sure. Yes. Sure.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
My birthday twin.
Hey.
Oh, nice. That's nice.
I think I have the same birthday as like Fabio and like Judd Hirsch.
I'm sorry.
I've got a weird mix. I've got Coolio.
Ooh.
Dom DeLuise and Tempest Bledsoe from The Cosby Show.
Wow, that is a weird mix.
So,
oh, I think I have also, I just found out Ruth Bader Ginsburg because that's my birthday too.
Oh, nice.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
RBG.
I'm living life all right.
All right.
Not bad. All right, so yeah, so that's the movie. I think it's, I mean, as far as it goes, as for the other SNL movie scene, it's definitely not one of the worst, I think.
No, it's not.
Yeah. It's definitely better than, like, you know, It's Pat.
I enjoyed it
a lot more than Superstar.
Right.
Which
Saved His Family weren't crazy about either.
Yeah, I didn't think that movie really worked. We got a few Rotten Tomato reviews here.
Oh, yeah.
Here for Jeff Andrew from Time Out. He says, after I swallowed my disbelief and gave my critical faculties a break, I was tickled every 40 minutes or so.
So twice?
let's see. Roger Ebert, he gave it a 1-star review.
See, that's too harsh. What?
Yeah.
He gave a thumb up to Booty Call, if I recall correctly.
I don't know that offhand.
So what's up with that?
He said there have been good SNL movies like Wayne's World, The Blues Brothers, and Stuart Saves His Family. I would debate that last one. They all have one thing in common. SNL producer Lorne Michaels was not primarily responsible for them. Michaels had nothing to do with Stuart or Blues Brothers. Credit for the glories of the Wayne's World pictures, which he did produce, should arguably go to their directors and stars. Mike Myers went on to Austin Powers. Michaels went on to Coneheads, Superstar, A Night at the Roxbury, and now The Ladies' Man. If I were a Hollywood executive, I would automatically turn down any Michaels SNL project on the reasonable grounds that apart from the Mike Myers movies, he has never made a good one. He doesn't even come close. His average star rating for the last 4 titles is 1.125. Just to put things in perspective, the last 3 Pauly Shore movies I reviewed scored 1.5.
Jeepers.
So, Roger Ebert, not a fan.
Apparently not. Why? Wow,
not a fan.
Salty.
And he was one of those dudes that kind of gave people the benefit of the doubt where he wasn't, to a certain degree, he wasn't
I'm a critic and this is beneath me, this type of film.
No, he could like
stuff.
I mean, Roger Ebert, he wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah, well, again, what's up with that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Roger Ebert could be a horny dude.
Oof. I thought he liked it for Tiffany Amber Thiessen alone.
I'm surprised he didn't give the movie another star just for her. I think it deserved another star just for her.
This has been a Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
This is going to be a Tiffany Amber Thiessen podcast.
Appreciation.
I am there for it. Yeah. I am there for it.
And but, then Melrose. Was she in Melrose Place? I was going
to
make her.
She was on 90210. She went on to 90210 after Saved by the Bell came to an end.
Wow, you're well versed in her.
I know more about this than I probably should. I'm going to be quiet and just give myself one of those.
But yeah, as far as movie goes, I thought it was all right. Though it's pretty fine.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
This was acceptable.
It didn't feel like a chore to watch it. You know?
I think if I went to the theater and paid for a ticket for this, I might be more upset about it. But when it's something you just come across and watch a little on TV or something, it's fine.
Yeah, and also, I mean, as far as characters go, I remember hearing that he was going to get a movie. Then, like, I realized, oh wait, like, Tim Meadows didn't come out with this character till like late into his tenure in SNL.
Yeah, it was like years. Because Tim Meadows was on SNL for a long time. He was on for 10 seasons from like 91 to 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he didn't come with this character like 97. I was like, wow, did you just come with this up with this guy?
I liked go ahead.
Oh, well, I read a little about the origins of it. He talked about this a little on Seth Meyers' show too. Okay. I don't know if you saw that part. But apparently he used to do this voice like on the phone to like delivery people and stuff just to amuse his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he would actually also call into shows using this voice.
Nice.
He would not identify himself as Leon Phelps. He had some other name which I didn't write
Ruttiger,
down.
Ruttiger, I think it was.
Yeah, it was Ruttiger. That was it.
And people are like, that's an interesting name, Ruttiger.
Yeah. And he's doing this on his, he was like, Adam Sandler and those guys, they're making movies during the SNL hiatus. I'm like calling into TV shows with
that's
the
what
ladies' fanboys.
Yeah. Hilarious.
I'm going full jerky boys. During my downtime,
but yeah, I was very happy when Tim Meadows finally got like a recurring character that broke a little bit on the
I liked his Lionel Osborne perspectives.
I guess that's another character he had. It never really took off. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we like the show would come on at 4:44 in the morning,
right? And it was like very dry, and
he didn't know anything about the guest. Like he had Chris Rock on.
Yeah.
His character was talking about the Million Man March. Right. He's like, so how many people were there? It's like a million, man. Yeah. But it's funny.
It had that subtext of how like a lot of black programming is marginalized, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because it's on in the middle of the night. It's on like 4:45 in the morning or something. Yeah. Some weird time like that.
Yeah. Very much so. But it's another character like I totally forgot about until you mentioned it.
Yeah. He was an underrated guy, but he was always like a good guy on the show. And I find him very likable. I always...
Great on Mean Girls.
Yeah.
He's terrific in Mean Girls.
My buddy Rick Younger is playing the principal character that he played on Broadway.
Oh, on the musical.
Yeah, in the musical.
Oh, nice.
Musical's really great.
Do they keep the cast on him?
He does not have the cast. No, okay. He doesn't have the cast. But I was going to see it because my buddy's in it. He's a fellow comic and everything.
Mm-hmm, right.
And, you know, just to see him. And I really enjoyed the movie, too. But I wasn't expected to be. I was blown away by that musical. Wow. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really fun. Like, those kids are like fucking athletes jumping around all over the place singing and shit. All
right. Because whenever I hear like a Broadway show is being adapted from like a movie or like, you know, some property, I'm always like, really? It's just like, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants, the Broadway show.
Yeah.
Right.
Beetlejuice, the Broadway. I'm like, come on.
Because they always want to use like a known property and a built-in audience.
Because they know money's going to be coming.
Exactly. I get like, you know, crabby old man. Like, why don't you just come up with an original idea and have an original Broadway show like Hamilton or something? Like, why do they have to have like, you know, this theme park ride, the Broadway show.
Sure,
But like, I mean, I did hear like a lot of good things about Mean Girls.
It's really good.
And whatnot. Yeah. So I was like, all right.
Yeah.
But I mean, Tim Meadows, I think we all agree, underrated. He was a solid dude. He rarely broke from what I remember. And he was always just in there doing his thing and, you know.
Yeah.
Our hat's off to you, Mr. Meadows.
I would like to see like one of Tim Meadows' other projects be a big enough hit that he could come back and host the show. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I think so, yeah. I mean, he pops up here and there, like Dewey Cox and Popstar.
Walk Hard is fucking incredible. And, it's funny, and Tim Meadows is hilarious.
Maybe we'll talk about that this summer.
Yeah, we got to talk about Walk Hard at some point.
All right.
I will make that happen.
All right, done.
Oh, by the way, we have a little bit of trivia from the show's IMDb page. So, are we ready?
Let's do it.
Are we ready to dive into the trivia?
Do we have time? This is going to be a lot?
We'll do our best. We will fit this in because this is too interesting not to include.
Okay.
First bit of trivia. This movie was based on the Saturday Night Live skit of the same name.
Yes.
Is that
true or false?
That is
are you done?
Yeah, that is the first one. And here's the second bit of trivia on IMDb. David Wells appeared in a scene, but it was deleted.
The baseball player? That's what I was saying. From the Yankees?
Yes, apparently so.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it on a deleted scene?
Is that...
No. I don't know how this person found out about this deleted scene.
Paramount didn't really put much on their DVDs back then.
They did not. There's a little behind the scenes cast interviews on this where the people are like talking about their characters and all that. But no, there is not a lot of information about this movie out there.
Oof. All right,
we may become the preeminent source on the Ladies' Man movie.
Oh, we're gonna get a boost in listenership today.
And they filmed it in Canada too, right?
Yeah,
because Aaron Berg was on it, and he's Canadian.
Oh yeah,
not just because he was in it, but I just looked that up. I just happened to look
in the Roger Ebert review. He says he plays a radio talk show host in Chicago, and then parentheses, i.e., Toronto with CTA buses.
Yep.
I mean, because Ebert was from Chicago, so of course.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was a budget thing.
That's one of the things, like, when you're from the city and you see a movie that's supposed to be filmed in a city, and you're like, that's not our city.
That's a few location shots, and then it's Toronto or Vancouver. Yeah.
That's what they did back then. They still do it.
Yeah, they still do it.
It's just cheaper. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. You just send second unit to the city, you get some shots of the Sears Tower or whatever. Or
it's like, call Chicago.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. And that's our podcast, guys. Thanks for...
Let's see. Did we want to talk about some of the feedback that we got on Twitter about the?
About the last episode.
About our last episode. Yes.
Yeah. The superstar episode. It was the
superstar.
Very controversial. Apparently.
Yeah. You listened to this one,
I did.
Right,
yeah,
Chris?
Yeah.
You said okay. What did you think of the episode? Let's hear it from you.
Yeah.
I thought you guys trashed it.
We did.
Yeah.
I mean, deservedly so.
Like in my defense, I didn't hate it as much as you and Natty hate it. You guys win it. You guys win it. You murked it.
I do remember seeing it recently. I saw it recently, and I think the gag was that they were like 30. Like, they're old as fuck playing these high schoolers.
And I'm not opposed to that gag because I loved it in Wet Hot American Summer, where everybody's like 25 or 30 and they're playing like 15 or 16.
Mm-hmm.
But it just didn't work for me in Superstar.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was just like,
you know, if I'd like the movie surrounding it. But we had one. Maybe you should read this one. This response we got.
Sure. So we had this one from our listener, Bacon Awesome Love, at Bacon Awesome Love on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I never yelled bullshit alone in my car before listening to this episode. Napoleon Dynamite was trying too hard. What? that movie was hilarious, unique, and still quotable to this day. I say nah to you, sir. And that's by Melanie Jasmine, aka my sister.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make your sister mad again. Uh-huh. I'm gonna say I like Nacho Libre a little better. Napoleon.
Wow, yeah,
that's not. You know what? I might be with you on that. Nacho Libre, underrated.
I haven't seen Nacho Libre in so long. I remember. I don't even remember what we said about Napoleon Dynamite. First of all,
I think
we just mentioned it in passing.
Yeah, because I think I mentioned that like Mary Catherine Gallagher was Napoleon-esque, and then that sent somebody off on a tangent.
Maybe we compared the talent show to the ending of Napoleon Dynamite.
Possibly,
or something.
Yeah, that too.
Jared Hess, the director.
Yes, he did. Yeah. He did Nacho Libre and Napoleon.
I think I saw Napoleon Dynamite at the wrong time, personally, because it had. Like, by the time I saw it, it had been built up by people I knew for weeks or possibly months because I don't think I saw it until it like was on home video or something.
Right. I mean, that's
and
a
then
weird
I watched
thing.
It and I was just like, oh, is this all?
Yeah, it was a weird thing with that movie because like it's like this very small indie movie mm-hmm. with people no one heard of in it,
right.
directed by someone no one heard of, right. but it managed to be like this huge, like you know, mainstream hit.
It right. broke out, yeah.
It did. It was, in, and like everybody was talking like Napoleon Dynamite, saying like, "Gah!" And yeah. of course, everybody was wearing "Vote for Pedro" t-shirts. It was a right. weird thing. Like this little small indie movie became yeah. like this. Like MTV was like you know singing its praises. It became like a huge mainstream hit.
There are things I like about Napoleon Dynamite, but I don't love it the way
now,
most people in that.
Around this time, I was more into Ron Burgundy. Than
yeah,
Napoleon.
People were
Dynamite.
Doing that. People said,
"Hello, my lady." Yeah. I said, "Yeah."
Anchorman, I think, is wonderful, yeah. and I think we should cover Anchorman.
Maybe you guys haven't done that?
What's, we have
is
not.
It, we SNL we at alum, but
yeah.
not the...
No, well, I think what we're going to do is, because we're at the end, we're oh. nearly at the end of official SNL spinoff movies, I think okay. we are going to expand it out to movies that SNL right. alum have done.
Oh, cool.
So
I have many leather-bound books.
So that
I
is,
love that movie.
It smells of rich mahogany.
I'm sorry. Right. I'm going to say something. Throw it out there. If you like it, you keep it. If not, you can throw it right back.
Yeah.
I want to be on you.
You have a magnificent hiney.
I want to be on you.
Wait,
so
no.
Classy.
I want to be friends with it.
I want to be on you. Oh. Maybe we should do Anchorman. I love that movie.
That's a classic.
Another one. Like, yeah. Dudes were just quoting that thing
yes.
left and right.
I mean, because, yes. you know, I think Anchorman definitely qualifies because it's Will Ferrell. It was co-written and directed by Adam McKay, who used to be the head writer mm-hmm. SNL.
Right.
It has David Koechner in it. It has Paul Rudd, who's a frequent host. Steve Carell, the great Steve Carell.
Yeah. Maybe we'll put out a poll to the listeners and say, what movie should we do after we do, you know, a movie for next week, MacGruber?
We could do that.
You
put
have
it out to
do
people.
Anchorman.
Oh,
you
well,
have
yeah.
to do it.
All right.
Yeah, I think.
I think if they love your podcast, they're going to want you to do Anchorman.
Yeah, Anchorman. I don't even have to go to the library for it because I own a copy.
I
don't want to brag.
Do you have Wake Up, Ron Burgundy?
I do. I did get the special deluxe edition, which was the movie they made out of the outtakes of the deleted scenes.
Now, is it true that that was the first one and they had to redo it?
Is it? Well, I never heard of that.
I don't know.
My understanding is that Wake Up, Ron Burgundy was just built out of the scenes they cut out of the first one.
Okay.
Like, they had a whole subplot about a terrorist group that they cut out. And they had, like, people like Amy Poehler in the terrorist group. And
they had so much shit in that movie.
There was a lot.
Yeah.
They went down some roads.
Yeah.
I like the sound of this. Maybe we should do this.
Yeah, we could do a poll. We could do a poll and we could
Dorothy Mantooth was a saint.
That's right. let's see. We had another little bit of feedback our friends at That Week in SNL talking about the Superstar episode said, strange to see that this is the one that nearly broke you guys since we actually kind of enjoyed this one but couldn't stand Roxbury.
They hated Roxbury more than they hated.
They did. They were way down on Roxbury.
But you were like the reverse.
I was the reverse. I found Roxbury acceptable.
Okay. Interesting.
Natty Bumpercard said, our guest last week, he said it was probably my fault. Most things usually are.
Agreed.
Yeah. But, I mean.
No lies detected.
These things are always a crapshoot.
Yeah,
you know? Comedy is very subjective.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
I mean, we're all comics. We know you can do the exact same set in front of a different audience. It can be a huge hit with one. And then,
and I have.
And you can just horribly
bomb. I don't write new jokes.
you can horribly bomb in front of another audience.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, oof. All right, so that's. That's it. But that's our podcast.
But Chris, tell us about you. Where can we find you if people enjoyed hearing from you? Where can they listen?
Yeah, I too have a podcast called The Mundane Festival. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean. Yeah.
All platforms.
Yeah. Instagram, Chris Lamberth on Twitter and Instagram, and you can see me.
LAMBERTH.
Okay. Not like the Highlander guy.
Final season of Orange is the New Black and season 2 of Mindhunter on Netflix.
Nice.
Coming out in a couple weeks, August
16th. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn, wow, you're in the Netflix family, brother.
Netflix has paid a lot of bills for me.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is nice. We will be sure to check you out on that.
Yeah.
Well done, sir. And yeah, if you want to follow me, I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible. I got a few shows coming up this month.
You got the Decomposition Podcast
Live. Yes, Decomposition Podcast Live. There's in Old Canal Inn in Nutley, New Jersey on the 9th, August 9th.
Yeah.
The podcast I was on, I've been on it three times, where we talk about like a song that's a guilty pleasure, and we kind of break it down verse by verse, and we talk about, you know, the people that made the song and all that stuff. So I'm going to do a set. They're going to have a live show where I'm going to do a set, and then we're going to talk about one song that's like a guilty pleasure. I don't know what song they chose. It's going to be like a...
Are they going to surprise you at the show?
I think it's going to be a surprise, yeah.
Ooh.
So you give them a couple songs that you like that, and then they come at you with either one of them?
Yeah. Well, basically, the podcast is done by these two people, Brad and Katie. They, mm-hmm. they live in Bloomfield.
Okay.
And, you know, close to my home.
What's so the address?
594. No. So, like, they find a song that it's kind of a guilty pleasure, or a song that just is interesting to talk about.
Oh, okay.
And then they break it down verse by verse.
You talked about like Hall & Oates on the show.
Yeah, I've talked about Hall & Oates, Private Eyes. I've talked about Black Street No Diggity,
mm-hmm. and Huey Lewis. Right?
Huey Lewis, Do You Believe? Their first big hit.
Have you ever been to Daryl's house up in Pawling, New York?
No, I know about it. I've seen the show a couple times.
It's a cool venue.
I gotta go.
Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, it's a great podcast, Decomposition Podcast. Give it a listen. And yeah, if you're in Nutley, New Jersey, come see me on the 9th.
Nice.
And I have a few other shows happening later this month. I think I'll be in like Jefferson, New Jersey later this month. Just check it all on DarrenCredible.com.
Yeah, cool. Nice. I'm gonna see the Decomposition Podcast show because they're going to have me on that podcast sometime soonish, I think.
When is this? August 9th?
August 9th.
Yeah, Friday, August 9th. So next Friday.
Oh, shit. I might have to come.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
All right.
Let's roll
and,
through.
And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, at Trumbull Comic. I don't use Instagram, though. Just follow me on Twitter. You can also follow the show's podcast or the show Twitter page at SNL Nerd Show.
The heat is starting to kick in.
Yeah, the heat is kicking in.
I'm the heat.
Getting groggy. We are also on Facebook. You just search for SNL Nerds. You'll find us there. We post fun things on both of those.
Yeah.
And you can go to non-productive.com. Check out the other shows on the Non-Productive Network and also contribute to our Patreon there.
Yeah, we got other shows at Non-Productive. There's the Honeymooners podcast. We have a new podcast called Side Adventures, which is an actual play D&D podcast. So
That just started up.
Yeah, just started. Yeah, so give that a listen. Donate to our Patreon. Donate to us. Give us some money, please.
Kick us a little money. You can hear the fun conversation we had on mic before we officially started recording this episode. So
it's worth a dollar.
Yeah, we talk all about technical podcast stuff. Yeah. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's going to get released over there?
It could be.
Yeah.
Okay, I said anything.
We didn't say anything real heinous.
No.
We didn't trash anybody.
Yeah, Frank one time decided to open up an episode with us just babbling.
And, oh, yeah, I like that. So, I don't mind that. So, I like that.
I mean, not that we don't babble during the regular podcast.
Sure, but I know what you mean, like the preamble and all that good stuff.
But anyway, all right, so that is it for this week. Next week, we're going to be back. We're going to be covering the last movie on our summer movie marathon list, MacGruber.
MacGruber!
Great film.
Oh. Yeah, so I haven't seen it all the way through. I'm looking forward to seeing the whole thing. I've seen bits and pieces, and I hear good things.
I can't wait.
Classic. I hear good things.
Good things.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. We will see you next Monday.
Bye. Later, guys.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.